Chapter 145. Old sound round his head. All next day, he was occupied in disposing of his fishing boat and tackle, in packing up, and sending to London by wagon, such of his little domestic possessions as he thought would be useful to him, and in parting with the rest, or bestowing them on Mrs. Gummidge. She was with him all day. As I had a sorrowful wish to see the old place once more, before it was locked up, I engaged to meet them there in the evening. But I so arranged it, as that I should meet Ham first. It was easy to come in his way, as I knew where he worked. I met him at a retired part of the sands, which I knew he would cross, and turned back with him, that he might have leisure to speak to me, if he really wished. I had not mistaken the expression of his face. We had walked but a little way together, when he said, without looking at me, "Master Davy, have you seen her?" ? Only for a moment, when she was in a swoon, I softly answered. We walked a little farther, and he said, "Master Davy, shall you see her, do you think?" ? It would be too painful to her, perhaps, said one. "I have thought of that," he replied. "So told, sir, so told." "But, Ham," said I, gently, "if there is anything that I could write to her, for you, in case I could not tell it, if there is anything you would wish to make known to her through me, I should consider it a sacred trust." "I am sure, aunt. I thank ye, sir, most kind. I think there is something I could wish," said her aunt. "What is it?" We walked a little farther in silence, and then he spoke. "Tant that I forgive her. Tant that so much. 'Tis more as I beg of her to forgive me, for having pressed my affections upon her. Odd times, I think that, if I hadn't had her promise fur to marry me, sir, she was that trustful of me, in a friendly way, that she'd have told me what was struggling in her mind, and would have counseled with me, and I might have saved her." I pressed his hand. "Is that all?" "There's yet a something else," he returned, "if I can say it, Master Davy." We walked on, farther than we had walked yet, before he spoke again. He was not crying when he made the pauses I shall express by lines. He was merely collecting himself to speak very plainly. "I loved her, and I love the memory of her too deep to be able to lead her to believe of my own self as I'm a happy man. I could only be happy by forgetting of her, and I'm afeard I couldn't hardly bear as she should be told I done that. But if you, being so full of learning, Master Davy, could think of anything to say as might bring her to believe I wasn't greatly hurt, still loving of her, and mourning for her, anything as might bring her to believe as I was not tired of my life, and yet was hoping for, to see her without blame, where the wicked cease from troubling, and the weary are at rest, anything as would ease her sorrowful mind, and yet not make her think as I could ever marry, or as 'twas possible that anyone could ever be to me, what she was, I should ask of you to say that with my prayers for her that was so dear." I pressed his manly hand again, and told him I would charge myself to do this as well as I could. "I thank ye, sir," he answered. "'Twas kind of you to meet me. 'Twas kind of you to bear him company down. Master Davy, I understand very well, though my aunt will come to London afore they sail, and they'll unite once more, that I am not like to see him again. I fare to feel sure, aunt. We needn't say so, but so 'twill be, and better so. The last you see on him, the very last will you give him the lovingest duty and thanks of the orphan, as he was ever more than a father to?" This I also promised, faithfully. "I thank ye again, sir," he said, heartily shaking hands. "I know where you're a-going. Goodbye." With a slight wave of his hand, as though to explain to me that he could not enter the old place, he turned away. As I looked after his figure, crossing the waste in the moonlight, I saw him turn his face towards a strip of silvery light upon the sea, and pass on, looking at it, until he was a shadow in the distance. The door of the boathouse stood open when I approached, and, on entering, I found it emptied of all its furniture, saving one of the old lockers, on which Mrs. Gummidge, with a basket on her knee, was seated, looking at Mr. Peggotty. He leaned his elbow on the rough chimney piece, and gazed upon a few expiring embers in the grate, but he raised his head, hopefully, on my coming in, and spoke in a cheery manner. "Come, according to promise, to bid farewell to tea, eh, Master Davy?" " he said, taking up the candle. "Bear enough, now, and it?" "Indeed you have made good use of the time," said one. "Why, we have not been idle, sir. Mrs. Gummidge has worked like I didn't know what Mrs. Gummidge and worked like," said Mr. Peggotty, looking at her, at a loss for a sufficiently approving simile. Mrs. Gummidge, leaning on her basket, made no observation. "Fears the very locker that you used to sit on, long with Emily," said Mr. Peggotty, in a whisper. "I'm a going to carry it away with me, last of all. And here's your old little bedroom, see, Master Davy. Amist as bleak tonight as art could wish." In truth, the wind, though it was low, had a solemn sound, and crept around the deserted house with a whispered wailing that was very mournful. Everything was gone, down to the little mirror with the oyster shell frame. I thought of myself, lying here, when that first great change was being wrought at home. I thought of the blue-eyed child who had enchanted me. I thought of Steerforth. And a foolish, fearful fancy came upon me of his being near at hand, and liable to be met at any turn. "'Tis like to be long," said Mr. Peggotty, in a low voice, "afore the boat finds new tenants. They look upon tea, down beer, as being unfortunate now." "Does it belong to anybody in the neighborhood?" I asked. "To a mask maker uptown," said Mr. Peggotty. "I'm a going to give the key to him tonight." We looked into the other little room, and came back to Mrs. Gummidge, sitting on the locker, whom Mr. Peggotty, putting the light on the chimney piece, requested to rise, that he might carry it outside the door, before extinguishing the candle. "Dan," said Mrs. Gummidge, suddenly deserting her basket, and clinging to his arm, "my dear Dan, the parting words I speak in this house is, I mustn't be left behind. Didn't he think of leaving me behind, Dan? Oh, didn't he ever do it?" Mr. Peggotty, taken aback, looked from Mrs. Gummidge to me, and from me to Mrs. Gummidge, as if he had been awakened from a sleep. "Didn't he, dearest Dan, didn't he?" cried Mrs. Gummidge, fervently. "Take me along with you, Dan, take me along with you and Emily. I'll be your servant, constant and true. If there's slaves in them parts where you're a-going, I'll be bound to you for one, and happy, but didn't he leave me behind, Dan, that's a deary dear." "My good soul," said Mr. Peggotty, shaking his head, "you didn't know what a long voyage, and what a hard life 'tis." "Yes, I do, Dan. I can guess," cried Mrs. Gummidge. "But my parting words under this roof is, I shall go into the house and die, if I am not took. I can dig, Dan. I can work. I can live hard. I can be loving and patient now more than you think, Dan, if you'll only try me. I wouldn't touch the loans, not if I was dying of want, Dan Peggotty. But I'll go with you and Emily, if you'll only let me, to the world's end. I know how 'tis. I know you think that I am lone and lorn, but, dearie love, 'tan't so no more. I ain't sat here so long, a-watching, and a-thinking of your trials, without some good being done me. Master Davy, speak to him for me. I knows his ways, and them's, and I knows their sorrows, and can be a comfort to 'em, some odd times, and labor for 'em malice. Dan, dearie Dan, let me go along with you. Apostrophe, and Mrs. Gummidge took his hand, and kissed it with a homely pathos and affection, in a homely rapture of devotion and gratitude, that he well deserved. We brought the locker out, extinguished the candle, fastened the door on the outside, and left the old boat close shut up, a dark speck in the cloudy night. Next day, when we were returning to London outside the coach, Mrs. Gummidge and her basket were on the seat behind, and Mrs. Gummidge was happy. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.